Okay, I'm here in the level control room with Mark, this evening's controller. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Megan.
So, what exactly does a telescope controller do?
Well, our job is essentially to look after the safety and safe operation of the telescopes.
Okay.
And that's our number one concern.
All right, and how many telescopes do you actually monitor from here?
We monitor nine.
Nine altogether?
Yeah, altogether from the giant 250-foot Lovell telescope right down to our 7-metre student research telescope.
That's the teaching telescope?
That's correct, yes. Right. Often used in the distance learning experiments.
Right. So from here, obviously, we've got the big windows where we can see the Lovell telescope. The rest of them you can't actually see, so how do you actually monitor what's going on with those?
All the positional and safety information is relayed down telephone link wise. So there's a modem at the far end, modem at this end, computerised information is fed down those lines and displayed on a series of monitors in the right hand half of this room. And from those monitors we can look in fine detail on all the telescope functions. One of the monitors gives an overall picture on what the remote site telescopes are operating, how they're operating, what object they're looking at. All kinds of details are sent back, not only the position of the telescopes, but things like wind speed and direction, barometric pressure, so we can keep an eye on the weather. You can imagine one of our greatest concerns is the effect of wind speed on the telescopes.
So how do you measure the wind speed?
Locally, we have a 150-foot mast, which has an anemometer on the top. That measures the wind speed at 150 feet. There's a backup system lower down at 45 feet, should the first one fail. All the remote sites have a similar tower of varying heights. They have their own anemometers, their own weather station on every site, and all that information is relayed back to Jodrell. So in some ways, depending on the wind direction, you can use the remote sites as an early warning of high winds.
Right. So when you say remote sites, how far away are the other telescopes?
Well, the furthest is Cambridge. That's the furthest baseline we operate. And the closest one is the Mark II.
That's the one across the field?
That's just the one across the field.
Okay, so if the wind gets up at one of the other stations, how do you know about it from here? What's the first thing that happens?
Should the wind speed increase at one of the outstations, there will be an audible alarm and there will be an accompanying visual alarm. And that will draw the control's attention to a high wind situation at that telescope. You would then bring up further display screens which would give you the average wind speed, the direction and a record of the peak wind at that site. You would then be able to make a decision, can operations continue, or if the mean speed goes above 35 miles per hour, operations would cease and the telescope would be parked, pointing straight upwards.
Right. And that's the safest position for wind speed?
That's the safest position for wind speed, yeah. Okay. Also, the telescope's azimuth would be aligned so that the bowl axis was pointing into the wind, and then the wind would have the least effect on bowl movement.
And you just keep an eye on the wind speed, and once it drops again, you can start using the telescopes again?
Yeah, we have a rule where the telescopes would always be parked for at least an hour should a high wind situation develop. After that hour, you can assess the situation, and if you think it's safe, the controller would make the decision to start the telescopes again.
So you said there was a visual alarm. We're sat here right next to the main control desk, which has got all sorts of buttons and gadgets and things all over it. Should we go around the desk and explain what all the bits are?
There's
two dials and a LCD screen on the left-hand side.
Yeah, the first one is a miles per hour readout of the measured wind speed at 150 feet.
From the tower?
Yeah, that's correct. The tower holds the 150-foot monitoring equipment, and on our left here we can see the wind speed and next to it the wind direction.
Right.
The smaller screen, the LCD screen that you referred to, is an instrument which is on top of a 45-foot mast, and that's our backup. It also enables you to measure the wind speed at two different levels, because sometimes the higher level measured wind can be significantly greater than that at 45 feet.
Right. And how does the height of that mast correspond to the height of the telescope?
Well,
how high is the telescope?
Unfortunately, if the telescope was tipped on its edge towards the horizon, that mast would only reach halfway. So there's a bit of mathematical interpolation required. For instance, if we phone the Met Office and we get a wind speed forecast, they will give us that speed measured in knots. So instantly we would have to convert to knots, and we'd also have to make an allowance for the fact that they will forecast wind speeds on the surface, and we're interested in the wind speeds at 150 to 250 feet.
Right.
Often we will discuss with the forecaster what their estimate would be at that point. The little noise we just heard in the background is an indication from the master clock, and it says it's 2030 universal time. This is a little audible reminder that a half hour has struck.
Okay, so next to the wind monitors, we've got a little panel with lots of lights on, lots of buttons, and one of them's flashing.
Now, because the big telescope has effectively an acre of wind collecting surface,
That's quite a lot.
It would be very vulnerable to wind damage should we operate it in incorrect wind speeds. So we have a three-stage alarm system locally that makes sure that the controller is constantly aware of the wind speed. Now, the light you're referring to means that in the past 10 minutes we have had a gust which has taken the wind above 25 miles per hour. If I press this button now, that light will extinguish, and you can see that that alarm has now been cancelled. Now, should the wind speed go above 25 miles per hour again, that alarm will reactivate.
Right, and you've got one for each of the telescopes.
Before we go on to those, I'll just explain that we have another alarm at 30 miles per hour and another one at 35 miles per hour. It's so you get a staged warning of wind speed increase. The other alarms refer to the outstation telescopes. There is a set of alarms for wind speed, one for each telescope, and they operate in the same way as the one I've just described. There's also a master alarm panel which would alert the controller to a fault condition. For instance, motors had tripped out. The computer would send a signal to this panel and trigger an audible alarm, and then the controller could take appropriate action to rectify that problem.
Okay, so in the middle of the desk,
yes,
is a big screen.
Well, at the moment that screen is indicating the telescope azimuth and elevation.
This is for the Lovell telescope.
The panel you're looking at is one of the control computers for the telescope. Essentially, instructions for the position of the telescope are sent to this computer. They are then relayed to the control system on the telescope. And this panel is duplicated on the telescope, so should this machine fail, the computer on the telescope will take control and the telescope will still be able to be moved. We have an additional completely manual backup, and above it, you can see there, it says manual rate unit, and should we need to, we can drive the telescope completely by hand. So there are occasions when the controller will sit here, and on these little buttons and switches, you can manipulate a structure at 3,500 tons at the end of your fingertips.
I presume you don't have to do that very often.
Not too often, mainly for engineering purposes. For instance, we recently had a situation where we had to repair part of the telescope structure, and I remember sitting at this desk being given requests for movement over the radio while engineers were next to part of the moving structure, and they would look for the damaged part of the wheel girder and I would position it according to those instructions given over the radio. And rather than type in different positions, it's far easier under those circumstances to turn an analogue potentiometer. Also, should all the computers fail, the telescope can still be put back in a safe position in an emergency. Before we move to the right, there's a very important button right in the centre of the desk, and it says emergency stop.
It's a big red button. That's very appropriate.
Yeah. And of course, more important than the safety of the telescope, and certainly much more important than the observations taking place, is the safety of personnel who may be working on the telescope. And should anyone get into a position of peril, about to be run over by the telescope, that button will stop the telescope, and as you can see, it's got a little safety guard over it so it isn't accidentally pressed. But that's a very important button, and we can't stress how important that is. Moving over to the right, we see a backup display of telescope azimuth and elevation, so in the event of a computer failure, we still know where the telescope's pointing. You need that because should systems fail, you need to know where to move the telescope to put it in a safe position.
because it's possible to move the azimuth in the wrong direction in an emergency. Because if you think about it, the telescope is connected to the ground by cables, and those cables run through a loop turner. Because the cables are fixed, the telescope can't continue to rotate indefinitely.
So at some point it's got to stop and go back round in the other direction.
Correct. And it would be dangerous to try and move the telescope further into that limit zone should high wind speeds be encountered. So immediately below those displays we can see the telescope master key. The telescope will not operate without that key inserted. So when personnel are in dangerous positions on the telescope, that key will be taken away and locked in a key release system so personnel can work in complete safety.
So they know the telescope's not going to move?
It can't move, that's correct. To the right of the master key is perhaps one of the most amusing buttons, and I shall press it so perhaps we can hear this. Telescope siren. And before the telescope would be moved after a period of it being left stationary, that button would be pressed to alert anyone who happened to be on the telescope, and that would warn them that the telescope was about to move. So moving on from the master key, the next panel to its right contains the controls for the hydraulic lock system, which in the event of high winds would lock the elevation movement in the zenith. Big steel fingers on the telescope lock into slots in the wheel girder, and the telescope is locked safely in the vertical position. What I didn't mention is that the control desk I'm sitting at today is the original 1957 control desk. The instrumentation has been replaced. I think this is the third generation of new instrumentation on the telescope.
Right.
But the desk is still 1957, and it has that wonderful solid 50s over engineering feel.
And that's sounds pretty solid.
It's pretty solid, and it's it's a well-designed piece of equipment.
Lasted pretty well.
It's lasted pretty well, yeah. And it's nice to see it having survived nearly 50 years. Another responsibility of the controller is to keep a written logbook, a bit like a ship's log in some ways. And the controller, when he starts his period of duty, will sign the book, take responsibility for the telescope, and record the telescope's operation, any incidents, any unusual occurrences, and this keeps a full and complete written record so that we can always refer back to incidents that have happened.
And these have been filled in every day since the telescope started operations.
That's correct, and we have a huge archive of all the logs, and it's very interesting looking back.
So how many controllers are there?
There are six controllers, and we share a 24 hours a day, 7 day a week shift pattern.
So there's always somebody in this room keeping an eye on the telescopes?
Yeah, this room is occupied every day of the year.
Even over Christmas in the year?
Yes, and someone draws the short straw and is here at midnight on New Year's Eve. And in some ways it's quite fun to do that. All right, you might miss your New Year's party, but there's something quite exciting. You watch the master clock tick over to zero and the New Year begins, and it has its compensations working over New Year. Behind me and to my left is what we refer to as the station master clock.
Right.
Now, because the Earth is turning, and we want to position the telescopes looking at stars which have an apparent motion, we need a time reference so that the computer can, in effect, wind out the motion of the Earth. So, to all intents and purposes, the telescope looks in a fixed direction and the Earth turns underneath it.
So, you might also be able to hear birds. I don't know if they're going to come out on the recording, but there are quite a lot of birds twittering away at the moment as it's just going dark. So I guess you see quite a bit of animal life in
such a big window. Yes, because the telescope is situated out here in the Cheshire countryside, we're surrounded by what really looks like a very nice park, surrounded by trees and grass. There's plenty of wildlife about. I've seen, well, of course, the place is covered in rabbits and squirrels.
Lots of rabbits,
and
yes.
Like
and a few pheasants I've seen around today.
Pheasants we've got as well. There's at least three ravens that seem to have taken up residence. The most interesting thing to watch is the birds of prey. We have a pair of peregrine falcons, and they hunt and use the telescope as a perch.
A kind of a lookout.
And you'll see them fly off the telescope and fly down and catch their prey. Sometimes you see them take pigeons, and it's like your own little window on nature. One evening, it was particularly nice to see a barn owl. Flew past the window, and very few of my colleagues would believe that I'd seen such a rare bird, and it reappeared a few weeks later on one of the astronomer's particularly keen bird watcher. I grabbed him as he was about to go out the door and said, "Come and look at the barn owl. I need you to confirm it's here." And we saw it again. Fabulous, beautiful ghostly bird. The telescope in the background, great view.